Today on Accept the Mystery, it's time to end the embargo and unload our cargo because Dan Wolfberg and Jackie and I watched Fargo, the TV series, episodes 1-3. I'm so glad I got to use that opening line again because it was one of my better ones. JFIO presents.
What? Are you kidding? We got us some family here.
This ain't no coon, huh?
Okay, I'm not going to sit here and debate.
I'll show you the life of a mine!
You will find a fortune. Good would not be the fortune you seek.
I suppose you think you've raised hell.
When I've raised hell, you'll know it.
Something is very wrong. I don't want Santana Abraxas. I've just been in a terrible auto accident.
What's the most you ever lost in the coin toss?
Sometimes knowledge is worse.
Accept the Mystery, a Coen Brothers podcast.
This is Accept the Mystery. This is the podcast where we talk about every single Coen Brothers movie and also TV shows that are inspired by Coen Brothers movies in absurd, ridiculous, extremely exaggerated, unnecessary levels of detail. My name is Josh Richmond. I'm the same guy who's always here hosting this show.
Oh, it's you.
Yeah, it's that guy. What's up? Nice to be back. That other voice you hear butting in is Jackie Lechtel.
Butting in on my own show?
Well, before I
co-host. I can butt in as much as I want.
Of course you can.
What if I just talk this whole time and don't let you talk at all?
That would be not cool.
Okay, fine.
Guys,
anyway.
I'm going to go. I'm going to let you guys work.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry. I'm sorry, Dan.
Awkward.
I'm sorry you had to see us fighting like this.
Yeah, this is behind the curtain.
It's because I didn't get any sleep, so now I'm taking it all out on Josh.
I get it.
Sorry.
I get it. You were sitting there. We were just watching the third episode of Fargo that we're going to watch today. You were sitting there. You were filing your nails the whole time.
I was so bored.
I can tell you're really involved and engaged in what's going on.
Okay. First of all, I stopped filing my nails right now out of respect to the podcast.
Okay.
So there's that.
Okay.
And I'm a girl. I need to file my nails, and I'm going to multitask and watch things and file my nails at the same time. It doesn't mean that I'm not interested, okay?
The other day, you said, hey, is it cool if I watch one of these episodes, like, on my phone while I'm walking my dog?
I tried.
How did that work?
It wasn't that good, because I was afraid of walking into stuff.
Yeah.
You
can't really pay attention to that and walk at the same time.
Yeah, but this was the one that was, okay, so usually, just Dan to explain, we usually watch everything together overall. Like, I'd say there's very few things that we haven't watched together.
Mm-hmm.
So, but three episodes is a lot of hours, and I didn't, like, because of my schedule this week, we couldn't really watch all of it together, so we just watched the last episode together. And so I downloaded the other ones on my iTunes, on my phone, and the first one's 72 minutes, and I was so tired one night, and I was like, oh my God, but I have to watch it today, because otherwise I won't have enough time. It was Thursday. And so I asked Josh, I'm like, well, maybe I can like watch a little bit of while I'm walking. And I watched like 10 minutes. And you know what? It helped. Because then later when I was in bed watching it, I had 10 less minutes to watch.
I like that you checked with Josh to make sure he was okay with you watching some of it while you're walking.
I was more like rhetorically asking if he thought it was okay. And regardless of what he said, I would still try to do it.
Yeah, you didn't actually ask. You said, hey, it's so cool that I can download this episode on my phone so I can watch it while walking.
I think I asked you, do you think you would be okay?
But it was not in the form of a question. It was in the form of, hey, this is something I'm doing.
Maybe. I'll check on my texts.
Yeah, you guys, I'm checking my texts.
No, keep introducing the show. Come on.
No. Hold on. I downloaded it on iTunes on my phone so I could watch while on a walk potentially?
Question mark.
Ha ha. Dad, you tell me, is that actually a question?
And then you said, you could. Or watch sitting down on a computer like a normal person with a tongue sticking out face with the eyes that are...
And you said, ew, I don't have time for that.
LOL.
LOL.
Yeah, that's how I sound on text. Okay, so anyway, we're both somewhat right. And
all right. I guess it was technically in the form of a question. You're right.
Yep. Rhetorical.
I'm glad that we settled that.
Yeah.
Me too.
Oh, me too.
Case dismissed.
That's right.
Case dismissed.
Okay, don't use myself against me.
The other person on the show, sitting to my left, he's a member of Part Wolf. His name, he also has Wolf in his name, which makes him Part Wolf.
He's the best part of Part Wolf.
On multiple levels.
Mm-hmm.
He's a comic and improviser and just generally an all-around good guy, hilarious person. Dan Wolfberg, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Thank you.
It's I think back when you were a guest on Josh Figures It Out, we were talking about the TV show Fargo.
Yes.
So as it was putting together Accept the Mystery, I was like, okay, well, I know we're going to talk about the show at some point. So I had you earmarked for sure you're going to be a guest whenever we talk
about
the show.
This has been percolating for a long time.
It's been percolating for
a
long
time.
I love that. Yeah.
We've gone through a lot of other guests, and you might have been like, when am I going to get my shot? Well, it's time.
I'm here.
Yeah. That's right. This is happening. And that means it's time to get to our very first segment of the day, which is where we ask our guest questions loosely inspired by the movie or TV series of the week. It's a segment called Inside Dan Wolfberg. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Oh, no.
So early on in the TV series Fargo, we see this man, Lester Nygaard, who attempts to fix a washing machine, a broken washing machine at his house, but he ends up just making the problem worse. Would you say you're a particularly handy person? Have you ever successfully managed to fix things around your house?
I am not a particularly handy person at all. No, I would never describe myself that way. I have to call people for help with embarrassingly small things. Most recently, my bathroom sink was clogged. And I was rooting around underneath the sink for like an hour.
Oh God, fun.
Without any success whatsoever.
That wouldn't help you.
What's that?
That wouldn't help.
Well, there was something I was trying to, I wasn't just rooting around. I did have a goal in mind. I was trying to figure out how to unhook the stopper thing so that you could just pull it all the way out, and then I could, like, you know, really dig in there and get out whatever was blocking the sink. But
yeah, they sell stuff I know they sell stuff to fix this. Like, I've never had to do this myself, but isn't this what pipe cleaners are for?
Shut up.
The things that you attach to popsicle sticks to make like caterpillars.
Right.
You dip those in the pipe.
Yeah, but see, the
thing I don't think that's really true.
Are you
though.
Sure? That's what
they're not literally.
They didn't always used to be arts and crafts projects.
Those are craft pipe cleaners. Probably modeled off of an old school one.
You know, like, unhook one of those wire coat hangers you get from the cleaners to use that to
that scoop all sounds like trouble.
Yeah, none of it worked. And I called my landlord, and he brought over some Drano, and
fixed
the problem.
There you go, Drano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to give your sink like a back alley abortion with a cone head.
Yes.
Graphic.
Sorry.
Luckily, I've never been in an apartment that had its own washing machine, so I've never had to attempt to fix a washing machine on my own.
God, I used to be in an apartment with a washing machine, and now I don't have it anymore, and I gotta go to a fucking laundromat, and it's bullshit.
Oh, that's annoying.
It's so annoying.
Yeah. That would drive me crazy.
For the first time recently, I dropped my laundry off at the laundromat and had them wash it for me.
Oh, man, that is luxury. I haven't done
that. It was very nice, but your clothes come back smelling like just straight up laundromat. The laundromat cell, they smell very strongly of laundromat. They use a lot of whatever soap that they use to make all
right,
cause
it's like
the same way.
Right, because yeah, they're putting it through like the industrial laundry process.
Yeah.
No, I put it in a washing machine like nature intended.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty handy.
Yeah.
I can fix stuff.
No, that's what,
but
that's
I also like ruined my sink trying to fix it too, because my little stopper thing wouldn't come off the top. And I was like also trying to figure out how I could unhook it to do the exact same thing you just described. And what I ended up doing was like, you know, there's like a circle on the top and then there's like the piece that's underneath it, obviously. I just ended up ripping off the circle from the top. Like, I was like, I got it! No, I didn't get anything. I just got the thing.
You ripped the metal off? Like, you ripped the...
Yeah, I guess so.
Wow.
But there was something that was connected that was like plastic or something too, you know, that like, I was like, oh, I'm getting it. It's stuck, but I'm getting it out. And then like the top part of it ripped off. And then I pulled out... Once I did that, then I could see how the piece beneath was like, because, you know, it has like a little U that's like hooked onto like a bar in the sink, right? Yeah. So then I could see like which way it was hooked, and then I like twisted it out. So I got it out, but I broke the thing and I have to replace it.
They call that the trap, right? The U? It's like the trap where like stuff gets stuck.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm saying this like I know, like I'm a fucking plumber. I don't know.
Yeah, that was impressive. You're like, the trap, right? I was like, oh, yes, sure.
Pipe cleaners, the trap.
So that's just because I was getting too, and I knew I was doing it like as it was happening, that like I shouldn't be working this, like I shouldn't be trying so hard, because I know how to fix stuff and I'm not supposed to try that hard. And then of course I broke it. So lesson learned. But in general, I can kind of fix stuff, but...
Yeah, I just
think is a sore spot.
I must just be spoiled because I just got used to, okay, if I have a problem, I'll call somebody to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a modern age where
your dad doesn't fix stuff, so you had no choice.
Right, I had no role model to teach me to do these things.
/ nobody else could possibly do it, so you had to call other people.
Yeah, look, we're in a society where just everybody's got their own niche job to fill, and if you need a problem solved, you can call the exact person whose job it is to solve that problem.
There's an app for it now too. It's called Handy. Or something. And you can you can use it for cleaning people and also for around the house, fixing that you might need.
They have a lot of apps that are like that now, I feel like.
Well, you have to use this one, and I'll give you the name because my friend Ellie's sister's friend developed it while at Harvard Business School.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I'm just saying.
I just feel
Don't laugh, Dan. Okay.
No, I just feel like that's really similar to things like Uber, where you just call up random people or the services that will deliver you things,
right.
Or they'll go on odd jobs for you.
There's no app for this, but every time I have to tie my own tie, I do have to Google how to tie a tie and follow the steps that the internet provides.
Right. That'd be so cool if there was an app for that, though.
Where you can call somebody over to tie your tie.
Yeah.
I think this is the future of business. Is just soon we're going to be in a world where if you need a problem done, you can just call whoever's the closest person who can do that, and they'll immediately come to your house and just do it.
Well,
no,
you know,
dealing
what?
With customer service or anything like that.
The tie one is actually pretty interesting because a lot of women... I actually don't know how to tie a tie. I should learn so I have that skill, but a lot of women know how to tie ties.
Right, because they tie ties for their husbands and stuff.
Right, so if you paid me, depending on how far away it was, and then it's you look at your app, who can tie a tie, who's near me, who is available and willing to tie a
that's
tie
really,
right now.
That's good to know.
I would do that. I would go tie ties for men. It would be so funny if it was enough money.
Yeah. Because, Dan, my process is always, if I have to tie a tie, I Google how to tie the tie.
Right.
And then I try to tie the tie following the instructions and fail miserably.
Mm-hmm.
And end up with a tie that's, way mismatched. And the knot looks crappy.
Big.
It's way too big. And the tie itself looks really short. And then I just end up asking a friend to do it.
Yeah.
So
we do need an app. So remember, we're going to have a business ideas podcast. That's another one.
That's another one to develop.
Yeah.
What do you think the market would pay? I don't know. $20? Come over, tie a tie?
Well, how much would you guys pay for someone to tie a tie?
$20.
You'd pay $20, really?
If a person could show up within 5 or 10 minutes, tie a perfect tie, and then leave, no muss, no fuss.
That 10 minutes is worth $20.
I got $5. I'm maxing out at $5.
$5?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how we would do this.
Yeah.
But would you do it for $20?
Yeah, if it was 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
I'd do it for $20.
There you go. Tie.
That's a,
yeah.
That's
tie,
enough.
Die. The app. That's, we could come up with a better name.
I kind of tie dye. No, we can't. It's done.
We're dying to tie your ties. Tie dye.
Oh my god! Good thing this is being recorded, so we can remember that.
So it's copyrighted. Pat Penn.
Pat Penn. Copyright. Trademark.
Trademark. All of them. Dan Malvo at one point convinces a hotel worker to get revenge on his boss by peeing in his boss's gas tank. Have you ever pulled any great pranks for fun or revenge?
Well, I grew up going to summer camp. And I was when I was a junior counselor at that summer camp, there was a boys junior counselor cabin and a girls junior counselor cabin, and the boys and girls would always have a prank war going.
Of course.
And I'm trying to think of the best pranks. There was a lot of failed prank attempts. We tried to put duct tape outside their door and then fill it with shaving cream so that when they opened the door it was
a wall full of shaving cream. Yeah.
But that didn't work at all. The physics are not as simple as it sounds.
To make an entire duct tape enclosure that would actually hold all the shaving cream.
Yeah, we were so confident that it was gonna just work perfectly,
just 100% out of duct tape.
Yeah, look, we were young.
Yeah,
I'm
just trying to understand it, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure I quite fully understood it, but
lots of pranks got caught up
in the moment.
Yeah, lots of pranks just seem like they work better in the movies or whatever. When you put saran wrap over a toilet bowl and think they're not going to notice, and then they're going to pee all over the saran wrap. They always notice. Because people always look at the bowl.
Have you guys ever tried that?
I haven't tried that particular one, no.
I just wonder if it would work. But no, it's
or putting somebody's hand in warm water and trying to make them pee the bed.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't put saran wrap on the I guess you're talking about if guys pee, they do lift up the seat. I think it's more of like people to poop on themselves.
I've been the victim.
Maybe put saran wrap on the bottom of the actual bowl, but then the lid on top. And if you're not paying attention, and you're just like, putting your pants in, sit down.
But I feel like even when I'm pooping, I always look at the bowl.
Maybe not everyone does.
Maybe
I always drop a penny in just to make sure. Yeah.
But no, I feel like in general, because I have before, like, got excited about April Fool's Day and thought I'll try to prank somebody, but it almost never works.
Yeah. One time, I'm a very deep sleeper, and my friends discovered that fact about me and have pulled pranks on me while I was sleeping. I've done stuff to me that you wouldn't be able to do to just a normal sleeping person, but I'm just a very heavy sleeper. Like, they shaved my entire left leg one time.
Oh!
And I wasn't even, like, drunk or anything. I was just
sleeping.
Asleep. And they rolled up my pant leg and covered my leg in shaving cream, and they shaved my entire leg.
God. That's kind of awesome, but also a little scary that you're such a deep sleeper. Yeah.
I know. And it was like a single, like a Bic razor, you know, like a single blade.
Yeah.
And
still, there's worse things they could have done. They could have shaved your eyebrows.
But, but that's still the fact that you wouldn't wake up from that. Like, that's so many different sensations. It's kind of scary.
I remember waking up
right
after it was done.
All the sensations.
There's a lot of sensations.
Of shaving cream on your... Yeah.
Your pant leg is getting rolled up. They probably moved your leg around.
Yeah.
They put shaving cream on it. Then there was a blade going against his leg. Then they probably wiped the shaving cream off.
At first, they were being like super, super cautious and gentle.
And then they just realized, he's not going to wake up.
Like, nothing will wake this guy. So they're just like... Then they were just like, you know... going really fast and being really rough about it, and I slept right through. I remember when I woke up, I remember, like, I was very disoriented, and I remember smelling, you know, I smelled something that I wasn't sure what it was, but it reminded me of hygiene. I was like, what is this?
Hygienic smell.
And then it was shaving cream, and I looked down, and I had no more hair on my leg, and I was like, oh, damn it.
Oh my God. That's so good.
Yeah, that is a really good one.
What else has anybody done to you?
Yeah, this is good to know. It's going to be public knowledge now, by the way, that you're like a deep sleeper.
Yeah.
Has anyone done anything else to you?
The same group of friends tied me up one time. Like, they tied me up with like a jump rope. They tied my hands and my feet together while I was sleeping, because I was sort of sleeping like curled up, you know? And so they tied my hands and my feet together, and then... they thought they would turn the light on and I would wake up and find out that I was tied up. But then when they turned the light on, I still was asleep. And so they threw a cup of water into my face. And even that just barely woke me. And
kind of.
And then I woke up all wet. And I was like, oh, what happened? And then I tried to roll off the bed and I was all tied up. I was like, oh, damn it.
That's what I have a memory of, actually. I remember being woken up by a burst of cold water on my
head.
Oh, God.
Which is, it's terrifying. Like, what? Because you're so disoriented for a couple seconds. And
I think not Dan. He just slightly barely wakes up. Like, one eye opens when that happens.
I think the most successful prank I ever pulled, actually, wasn't a very serious prank, but one year for April Fool's Day, it might have been fifth or sixth grade, I've got one of those greeting cards that when you open it, it plays a little song, like a MIDI song.
Mm-hmm.
And we played, I think, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I ripped out the electronic guts and hit a button so that it would just play that song nonstop, and then I stuck it in the bottom of somebody's backpack.
That's pretty
so
awesome.
So basically for the rest of the day they were followed around by this very faint Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I couldn't figure out where it was coming from or why it wouldn't stop.
That's pretty good, actually.
That's awesome.
I like that one.
That was solid.
I don't do pranks. I don't do pranks.
I'm so from a more civilized caste of society. It's never too late to start.
No. I'm not sure. I feel like I'm not remembering something that was prankish, but I can't remember what it would be. It's still not the main thing that I do, so whatever.
It's not the main thing that you do.
It's not my main
activity. I'm not a professional pranker.
At the top of your resume.
No. It's not even on the bottom of other interests.
Yeah, it's not even in skills.
Right, yeah.
Skills has great pranks. Yeah. Makes good coffee.
Yeah, I can't think of it. I don't know. If it comes to me later, I'll share, but...
So, In the very first scene of the show, we see a nearly naked man escape from Malvo's trunk and run into the outdoors and eventually freeze to death. Have you ever been naked outside?
When I was on a road trip in high school, senior year of high school, me and five other guys, there were six of us in a minivan, drove all around the country, and we stopped at in Walla Walla, Washington, because we knew somebody, one of the guys...
One of the best named towns
in the US. It's a great name. Because one of the guys on the road trip, his girlfriend was a freshman at Whitman College in Walla Walla. And the day that we were there happened to be the annual Whitman College Beer Mile, which is where everybody runs four laps around the main quad, which is roughly a mile. And you drink a beer during each lap, mm-hmm. and also you're naked while you're doing it.
Wow. Fully naked?
See, my story about this was also college-related, but I think you're one-upping my college story.
Wow.
So I participated in the Whitman Beer Mile, and I was like, college is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Whoa.
This is what college will be like all the
time.
But
you ran a mile fully naked?
I didn't run a full mile. I did like a couple laps. Yeah.
But fully naked?
I was fully naked, yeah.
Wow. And everyone was fully naked?
Not everybody.
But most people?
There was a good amount of fully naked people, yeah.
Wow.
If you're going to do that, you got to commit and go full naked. If you're just going to be out there in your boxer shorts, you just look like an asshole.
Oh, I agree with you. I guess, okay, sorry guys. I'm just trying to imagine this because my college experience was not like that because I was a child. So I was like not having that cool college experience. So I was like, no one watching you guys? Like
I think people do watch you.
No, I mean adults.
Yeah.
Like, no one cares?
I mean, it's Whitman College. They're all a bunch of hippies and, like...
They just don't
yeah,
care.
Yeah, no, if you go up north... Okay. There,
also,
yeah.
My freshman year of college, there used to be a party at my college called Sex Power God.
What?
Which was ranked in the top 10 college parties by Playboy magazine.
Oh, shit.
Wait, where did you go to school?
I went to Brown.
Oh, okay.
It was in Sales Hall, which is like in one of the main, like old, like, you know, classic halls on campus.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not a naked party, but you go wearing like as few clothes as possible, you know? Uh-huh. So I was wearing like tidy whities and like a vest. My freshman year was the last year that they ever did it because Bill O'Reilly sent one of his reporters undercover into the party and did a whole like 5-minute
like
segment about
God.
Debauchery in the Ivy League, and the guy was filming everybody. One of my good friends was he had a little bit too much to drink and had to be escorted out of the party by EMT Like there was like an extended clip of him on Fox News on the Bill O'Reilly show, like getting like drunkenly stumbling out of the party and
did
getting
get a
loaded
release
into an
for that?
No, he obviously never signed anything. Yeah,
he should sue them.
Like there hasn't always been debauchery in the Ivy League.
Yeah,
come on.
So that was fine.
Man.
But a bummer. Fuck you, O'Reilly.
Yeah, he doesn't have anything better to do.
Aren't there like real
fun.
Problems out there in the world that we could think about?
Yeah. I mean, this was 2005.
Know. Right. Yeah, pre-recession. It was a different time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, there was nothing better to
there
do.
There was a Republican president, so he's like not going to, you know.
Yeah, exactly. All we did was, you know, burn money and run around naked. Yeah. That was life before the recession.
Oh, man.
But yeah, you know, UC Santa Cruz has its own thing called First Rain, which is that the first time it rains every year, all the students meet in Porter Dorm and get naked and run around the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Similar, no beer involved.
I'm so jealous.
But I did not run. I didn't have the courage to do it. But I also didn't go out and half-ass it running around in like boxer shorts and sandals. Seeing like 250 to 300 people, I'd estimate, all gathered in the Porter Dorm, dripping wet. Honestly, one of the least sexy things I've ever seen. Like, so all shriveled, and nobody looks good.
Wow.
It was just, yeah.
Harsh critic over here.
Yeah, man.
Beautiful, naked form. Like, just a human body.
No.
Wow.
Lots of shrinkage. It wasn't working for me.
It's not porn.
You want to see nice big dicks.
He wants to see. Yeah. In Josh's roles, he wants like the porn version of this, where it's like everyone's like glistening and like tan and like.
Well,
really
that's what you imagine when you imagine like everybody getting naked in just like a bacchanal. Like every that everybody's gonna be kind,
like
you know, like
hard bodies, like
all oiled up and you
like
know
long wet hair that everyone's like flipping around.
Yeah, but it's not, and everybody's barefoot, so they're just like complaining about walking around and like stepping on rocks.
I always walk barefoot, actually.
Oh, well,
so that's the one thing I can contribute to this story, because I haven't been naked in public, which is like super sad for me.
Well, I didn't say naked in public. I said naked outside, which means it's...
Oh, I've been naked tanning outside, but that doesn't count.
I consider that counts.
Nah, that's like no one sees you unless you have neighbors who are spying on you.
That's
but what, like,
that's all I mean is like being out in your own backyard naked. Have you ever experienced that?
Yeah, but that's so boring. It's not boring, but I'm saying it's not the same
thing. Out in the elements.
Yeah, but that's not the same thing as like when you're out naked.
No, it's
what about like skinny dipping? Have you ever been skinny dipping?
I don't think I have, which is so weird. It just hasn't come up. But I'm such a like.
But you would if the opportunity came up.
Yeah, it's just so weird.
All right, Swim Prof 3. I know what the thing's gonna be.
Okay, I dare you guys. I dare all y'all.
Whatever.
But wait, can we talk?
I've skinny dipped before.
Okay, you're cooler than I am. I'm not opposed to it. Just, I don't know, it hasn't come up in the right setting. No, but I walk barefoot all the time because like I wear heels every day to work. I can't walk barefoot now because it's a little too cold. But like during summer, I was always walking barefoot. And it was so funny because there's neighbors that I always run into. And one of my neighbors, I ran into her like in the evening. And she legitimately, like she wasn't even kidding. She's like, oh my God, it's the first time I've seen you wearing shoes. And like it wasn't a joke because she sees me so many times and I'm just always barefoot. And I do it, even though, like you would think that would be dangerous because I'm like walking in my neighborhood, but I've only stepped on something once and it was not that big of a deal. It was kind of like splinter-esque or whatever, and then it came out and it wasn't enough to deter me, so I continued to walk barefoot until something horrible happens to me, which it hasn't yet, so I'm fine.
I think if you do walk around barefoot a lot, then you know your feet like adapt to it.
Yeah, like you get like calluses and even not just calluses, it's like getting used to the pressure of it, because at first you're like so used to having something between your feet and the ground. Yeah. And then like I can run barefoot now because, and it's not because my feet are so padded, it's just because you get used to like your body weight on your feet instead. But yeah, I like it, it's freeing. So yeah. I don't run around naked all the time, but my feet do, so there's that.
There, yeah, no, my feet are spoiled. I couldn't run barefoot and I can't fix a pipe. I'm not much of a man. I'm in this cushy modern
cushy
world
life.
Yeah, me and my cushy lifestyle.
You buy shoes, you buy plumbers, you can
yes,
buy anything.
I buy everything just to insulate myself from having to deal with this shit.
And you hate the naked bodies.
But speaking of real men, we're about to talk about a show that interacts with masculinity in some interesting ways, which is as good a segue as I could think of to dive into a segment we call the Big Reviewski. So this is going to be the first of four episodes we're going to spend talking about a TV series that came out this year called Fargo, an adaptation of the 1996 movie starring Frances McDormand, directed by the Coen brothers.
Don't ask me. You know these dates.
I guess I'm only saying, I thought maybe, I know it's mid-90s.
It's 96.
96. Thank you. Thank you for confirming that, Dan. And it's interesting because we're recording this around the season where everybody's announcing their big critic picks, like the best movie list and the best music list are all coming out. And I have seen Fargo top a few different critics lists for the best TV series of 2014.
Ew.
Yeah. So we're talking about something that a lot of people love, but I also know that a lot of people, including myself, were really skeptical about when it was first announced.
Right.
Because having been a fan of the movie Fargo for a long time, the idea that somebody would try to make a TV series of it just seemed like it had way more ways it could go wrong than that it could succeed.
But I think what they did so well is they didn't try to... It was completely its own thing.
Yeah.
But like they incorporated just enough elements from the movie to like... you know, warrant the name Fargo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it was more, you know, like tonally and in terms of the world and stuff like that. But they made it a completely unique and different thing.
Yeah. Well, first, with the initial decision to just not include any of the characters to the movie is very smart. Because I don't think anybody wants to see like the continuing adventures of Marge Gunderson or Jerry in jail.
No, although Gare. Am I right?
I know. Yes, I know. You want to see what like old man Gear is up to.
He's not old. He's still hot. I just want Gear. But it's okay.
Peter Stormare is probably in his mid-50s now.
Whatever. He's still a fox, dude. Doesn't matter.
He's probably like a silver fox.
Yeah. I'm sure he is. Okay. yeah, that's to me the only thing missing. But I love Billy Bob, so I'm happy with him.
Right. It's nice to have him intersect. And, you know, the fact that he has played major roles in a couple Coen Brothers movies helps
it's fun to watch him.
Helps us feel like it's part of that Coen-y universe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is something the creator of this show, Noah Hawley, definitely had in mind. He's explicitly said in interviews saying, I was really inspired not just by Fargo, but by like every Coen Brothers movie. And you see a lot of them make little appearances here and there throughout this series. Just one little detail, and I'll try to point out as many as I notice as we're watching this, but in the very first episode, I think you see Molly walk into a coffee shop and it says White Russians on sale.
Oh, yeah. I for sure saw that. Yeah. I was like,
I did not notice
yes!
that. That's awesome.
Yeah. They were $4.95.
Yeah. Good deal. Good deal.
Sweet
good
price
deal
for right White Russian.
Yeah. Especially if they're as good as the ones Josh made, which were so good.
We got to make those again.
Yeah.
Maybe for the final episode.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have some White Russians and reminisce.
No. And I haven't seen anything past three, just so you know, Dan. So no spoilers.
Okay.
No, it's good you're keeping me on your toes because I'm realizing I'm going to as I was watching this, I'm realizing I'm going to have to be really, really careful about spoilers.
Yeah, you are. Because I'll kill you.
Because I know that you've got an extremely sensitive spoiler alert. Well, you're going to kill me Lester style?
Yeah.
Like, just in like a fit of rage with a hammer? Jesus.
Like, you'll be standing there, like, taunting me with spoilers, and out of nowhere, I'll just kill you.
With her gavel. With her gavel.
Oh, right. You just gavel straight to the head.
That's so terrible. I'm just kidding. This is all a joke. I feel horrible.
I can see it like your rage has been building all this time. If you drop one more casual spoiler.
Yeah, I have a disgusting like perspective on what a spoiler is. So it's great.
Right.
Like Josh said, like it's good. Like this is my favorite one from today because Josh is like, it's good that we broke it up into all these different episodes because like the way we split it up like fits with the arcs that are coming up. And I was like, what? How could you? Like,
there are arcs in this show.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Oh, my soundboard is the best thing ever. Okay. Anyway, back to the meat of this.
I know. I hate to break it to you. Yes, there are arcs in this show.
Oh, no.
We're really only going to be talking about that initial arc today in those first three episodes.
Yeah.
Which, yes, the world is similar and the tone is similar, but also in many ways
darker.
I mean, hard to say. Maybe darker.
I think so.
I think that comes through in a few ways. Because there's definitely analogs between the characters of this show and the characters in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like Molly in this and Marge in the movie are not exactly the same character.
Right.
But you can see how their similarities, you know, being this kind of smarter than average police officer who's investigating the crime.
Yeah.
The big difference being that Marge was like the chief and was kind of in charge of the investigation and had everything under control. Well, Molly's at a different stage in her career. She's not married, she's not pregnant, she's younger, and she's still the deputy. So she doesn't really have the power to control the investigation. So you just see her getting stymied and more frustrated at every turn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which, and that does kind of make the story a little bit darker off the bat, because it's like, you have this good person trying to solve the crime, but she doesn't get to.
Well, and also Lester's character, I feel like, what's William H. Macy's character's name in Fargo?
Lester
versus Jerry. I think Lester is a much darker character overall. I think he you know, like, because Jerry never intended any harm to come to his wife.
Well,
you know?
Okay. Well, Jerry's definitely kind of a sociopath himself.
Fucking idiot.
And an idiot.
Like, going back to that, Jerry is my nightmare. Like, this is an existence of that kind of fucking person who's like, I need money, so I'm going to put my wife through a kidnapping. Like, idiot. Sorry. I know that's not the show we're talking about now.
No, it is true. And it's hard to say that, like, Jerry would never want, like, harm to come to his family because Jerry allowed his wife to get kidnapped. At the same time,
he is a sociopath, but yeah.
At the same time, I could never see Jerry killing his wife with a hammer.
Right.
I guess that was the point I was trying to make. That's a different level of scary.
Yeah. Well, Jerry is a sociopath, and Lester is not a sociopath. I think he's like, schizophrenic isn't the right thing, but he has a different problem, which is like, he clearly has some like built up problem in him, and he like freaks out and has like these psychotic breaks or something.
Yeah.
Which is different than being a sociopath who doesn't feel anything.
Well, this is, that's something really beautiful about the pilot. And this is, it's a longer than average pilot. It's like a full 72 minutes, but I feel like they need those 72 minutes to really give you the effect of, they start out telling one story and you think you understand where this is going. And then there's a big shock towards the end. Cause you see Lester and he's this put upon guy, and his wife is constantly haranguing him, and he's not appreciated at work, and he's just this total screw up who can't do anything right, which automatically puts you on his side, and you empathize with him, and you feel with him, and you're like, okay, this is going to be our protagonist who we can get behind. And then soon you realize you can't get behind this guy.
No.
They set you up to relate to him and sympathize with him, and then they just like pull that right out from under you completely.
Right. And even afterwards, and even in like the next two episodes you watch, as he's, you know, he's obviously terrified, and it seems like his primary emotion is basically just fear and trying to get away with this thing. Okay. But it also doesn't seem like he's grieving his wife particularly.
Yeah, he's not, but I think he's so distracted that he can't grieve. Like,
right.
He's so preoccupied with the fact that he's now a fucking murderer. And that, like, something has been unleashed in him. Jingle, jingle sound. And, like, you know, like, there's too much going on, I think, that's probably blocking his ability to grieve.
It's true that, you know, that he's kind of, he's still got to deal with the fact, you know, Malvo is out there and these two guys are coming to his insurance office.
Like all this other stuff.
And Molly won't stop investigating him. It's true that he hasn't really had a moment to, like, catch his breath.
Because when he's sitting in his house, like, he's, you know, it's replaying all the stuff that happened or like the words that were said, and he's like staring at the area and that kind of thing. So it's like knocking around in there, but it hasn't like hit him yet to like grieve, because isn't grief has like those certain stages where it's like denial or like whatever, and then you finally start grieving. So he's in some like shock denial stage, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he seems like he's definitely in shock, and he's in a mode where he's just got to keep reacting to the next thing.
Yeah.
Because there's constantly some new obstacle that he's like,
shit, shrapnel in his hand.
How am I going to get away with this?
Yeah.
But I mean, this is a guy who is willing to like hurl himself into a brick wall and knock himself out to try to not get taken to prison.
Yeah.
This is a guy who's got some deep-seated survival instinct.
Really?
Right?
Do you think that, Dan?
I would agree with that for sure.
But he has a deep-seated survival instinct?
He has been managing to get away with it so far. Hmm. He's putting up this facade, and he's at least managed to convince, you know, the police chief. And
that's because the police chief's a fucking idiot. That's like, anything could convince the police chief of anything. Like,
that's true. The police chief was biased
from
the
beginning.
That's
not a feat. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I see what you're saying. I guess I didn't think of him that way. I don't even know if he's like pretending to be incompetent. I think he just doesn't work well like in this world. Like, he's just this like weirdo, but like maybe he does have those survival skills, strangely.
Yeah, no, he's a total creep, and he can't really, and you can tell that he has trouble basically relating to anybody.
Yeah.
He can barely get like a word out of his mouth.
Yeah, I'm like really excited to see what his deal is.
I think it's a great performance from Martin Freeman, who I haven't loved in everything I've seen him in. I thought Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was just okay. And it's one of my favorite books, so that was really disappointing. And I never really watched The Office UK.
I didn't.
It's great.
Yeah,
it's great,
no, that's what everybody says. I couldn't get into it.
And what about Sherlock?
Yeah, you didn't watch Sherlock
didn't
either.
Watch Sherlock.
Couldn't even really get into the new Hobbit movies.
Well, that's because they're terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, but Martin Freeman is great. He's really good in this.
He's like a real actor. He's really good at playing. He's got that accent in the Minnesota style down.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh
he does.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And like that. But that Minnesota nice, you know, which was such a big factor in Fargo, is all over this. And it's something else that Noah Hawley talked about a lot in kind of the making of this series, is that he was really interested in digging into the way that, in this world, the ways that everybody is so preoccupied with keeping up a front and being polite and never letting their real emotions show.
Right.
Mm. And kind of the way that lets somebody like Lester hide in plain sight a little bit. Because nobody's really willing to, like, question him or question his story.
Openly confront.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you're saying they're not willing to do it because they see it and they're ignoring it, or
because they might think, oh, this Lester guy, he's a little weird, but I'm not going to dig into it too much because he lost his wife, and it just wouldn't be a very nice thing to do. The fact that everything is
superficial,
right? Everybody's so nice that nobody's willing to get past those superficial impressions,
right?
But I don't think that the Minnesota, like, I don't think the show is taking the point of view that's like the Minnesota nice is like a bad thing, you know? I think overall, again, I'm trying to like keep it in the context of the first three episodes and not like the whole
series.
I'm struggling hard to do that as well,
but like, you know, I think it's obviously a very dark show, but I think that there is like optimism about people at its core. And specifically these, like, you know, just nice people in the Midwest. You have
real bad guys in the story, but you have real good guys too.
Yeah.
And I think that contrast is really important.
Yeah.
Just as it was in the movie as well, because the movie was a real mm-hmm. good versus evil story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think the other big way that Minnesota Nice factors into this story is the way that Lorne Malvo can basically kind of run roughshod over everybody.
Yeah.
Because he'll just walk into a post office and say, hey, you know that package that doesn't have a name on it? That's mine. Give it to me. And the guy's not going to call him out on it. Nobody's going to question him. And he can just kind of do that over and over again. Because
he's really scaring people, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he really is. That was like... I mean, it's kind of scary to watch, but it was just like, you're like, okay, yeah, like, he's gonna fucking kill me. Like, he kind of got down to like the base level of like human interaction instead of like all these niceties of like, oh yeah, how you doing? Like,
right.
Instead of doing any of that shit, he's just like making it really clear, you're gonna fucking die if you don't do what I want.
Right.
So just do it. And that's such a like, you know, primal like kind of thing. So,
right. Yeah. There's two ways this traffic stop can go. You have a daughter, don't you? You should just walk away right now.
Yeah.
And yeah. It really is, what do you do in that moment? Is one of those great like moral questions the show poses right off the bat.
That's my favorite moral question so far that I'm really stuck on. But I think my instinct is to say I think he did the right thing because of his daughter, and he would have left his daughter alone, but I recognize that his job is a cop, so he needs to like protect and serve the community. But I mean, he would have died. Like, I think the guy would have killed him. So how would he have saved anyone anyway?
I don't know. It's...
like, in that situation,
right.
If he made the guy come out and, like, figure out who he was, he would have just died. He's not helping anyone.
It's hard to know. You know, the way Lorne Malvo is portrayed, it says this almost, like, oh, kind of larger-than-life, unstoppable, like, whatever he wants to do, he's just going to do it. He's going to get away with it, and he doesn't particularly care about covering his tracks. He's so confident in every situation that you just feel like he's totally in control, and if things are always going to go his way if you challenge him. But in that situation, he wouldn't necessarily kill a cop at a traffic stop. I mean, maybe he would, but...
Yeah, he would have.
I think he probably would.
I think he definitely... You know why, too, though? Because I don't think he was bluffing. I don't think he's going to threaten someone like that. It's not fun for him because he can do it. So it's not like he's going to get off on being like, oh, I could fucking kill you. Like, if he's telling him he's going to do it, I think he would. And also in that situation, if he did run his plate and do the registration right there, he would have figured out something was up right there. And that would have blown his cover and everything. So he was serious. Like, he was going to kill him. So I don't think that if he made him get out of the car and like did his job, nothing good would happen. Just one more dead cop. And then, by the way, they would never be able to, like, at the end of season or at the end of this third episode, we see how, like, they're piecing together who it was.
Yeah.
If he died, they wouldn't have been able to, like, piece that part together either. So,
right.
I'm just saying.
That's true. I mean,
he did the right thing.
It's right. But he's also a cop, and he's bound to his...
But she shouldn't die for no reason.
But that's part of what being... not dying for no reason.
But I don't think dying for no reason is his job.
Because part of being a cop is you have to... You go after the criminals, and you challenge them, and you're prepared for that sort of thing no matter what. And maybe he's
not... But I think you have to be a smart cop, right? So I think even though, like, technically the rule is, like, follow this rule and do it. But sometimes you don't follow the rules because following the rules doesn't get you the best result. And, like, I don't know how much he was thinking about it. I don't know if it was it was all like lucky or like more because he was scared that he didn't do it. But I still think his calculation was right, because it's like I think he knew this guy was going to kill him. And like, it just doesn't help anyone if he's dead, even though it's technically his job to make someone get out of the car.
Right.
You also have to be smart. Otherwise, you're not using your instincts, and you need to use your instincts too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but they really do spotlight that dilemma.
Yeah.
Gus Grimley kind of is the least connected to the action so far. Mostly he's kind of off at his own little story, and I think his arc so far, at least, is very internal.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of...
I love how it's connected.
Yeah, just kind of grappling with this thing he did or didn't do, and what is the right thing, and how do I do the right thing.
Yeah. But
Colin Hanks is really good at kind of showing that struggle and that internal journey, and his interactions with his daughter, and his daughter even saying, if I was in that situation, I'd go after the bad guys. That's what cops are supposed to do.
I know.
But right, doesn't idealistic. She say, they have some conversation about, like, there's only one, you know, and he's like, there's more than one right thing. And she's like, no, like, what do you, no, there's not.
There's just the right thing. There's just the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's idealistic and not realistic.
Or the other way of doing it is just wishy-washy. Saying there's more than one right thing just means you haven't really thought through what the right thing is.
I actually have a pretty strict moral compass in general, but I also think there's a lot of gray area, so I'm not really strict to defined right and wrong. Even though I am, but at the same time, like, I would say, like, this situation exactly is one of those situations where it's like, but I think this is the right decision, even though technically it may not seem as moral or pure or idealistic. But anyway, the guy would have died, so I'm glad he didn't.
Dan, you basically agree with that?
Feel free to disagree completely. That's just my strong position.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's hard for me to judge Gus, because I feel like, you know, I'm not a cop, and in that situation, I would have shit my pants as well.
Right.
But I think, I don't know if you could say that, like, he objectively did the right thing by letting him go. I think he was pretty much purely motivated by fear in that situation, even if it is like a fear like that was centered around his daughter and his daughter like losing him, mm-hmm. you know, but it's still fear. And I feel like as a cop, you're like, well, even if this guy might try to kill me, like, it's my obligation to, you know,
mm-hmm.
to confront him and try to, you know.
No, right, yeah, like that, but I just think he would have killed him, and then there would be no point to the confrontation.
I'm glad for the sake of the show that Gus didn't die in the first episode.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. It's, you know, again, Malvo often comes off as almost superhuman, but you've seen that very first interaction with him when, you know, he hits the animal and the guy he captured gets away. He does make mistakes, and... It wouldn't be a guaranteed thing that that Gus would have died. I mean, maybe probably you could say that, but I wouldn't say 100% guaranteed.
Yeah, maybe not.
I think one of the interviews I read with Holly said that while Fargo was his main influence on this, the two other big ones were A Serious Man and No Country for Old Men that he picked out specifically.
Mm. How is A Serious Man influencing it?
A Serious Man. And I hate to say this, but you'll get to that. I don't want to say spoilers.
Jesus Christ! Can I just go home, because this episode is ruined for me?
I know, I'm sorry. You'll know. But in terms of an influence of No Country for Old Men, the way I basically see how this show is conceptualized is like, what if you took Fargo and took the characters from Fargo? I mean, slightly rearranged, but characters in very similar situations and similar roles, and then like dropped Anton Chigurh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, he's Chigurh. He's not Gare.
Right.
He's Chigurh. Yeah.
Because he's kind of this like crazy badass killer, but he's also a guy that has his own strange moral code, even though it's not the same kind of code as Chigurh.
I haven't really seen it yet. I don't know what you mean that he has a moral code.
Or I don't know if code is right, but definitely a philosophy.
What's his philosophy?
I think a lot of it comes out in that interaction where he goes to the hotel. And he, you know, he just needs a room. He just needs to stay the night. But then the hotel owner starts questioning him, how many people are staying in the hotel? Like, it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And he sees that bullshit and he can't help but call it out, like, your room fees are bullshit. And, you know, she just kind of doesn't want to argue with him. So he decides to get her employee to, like, piss in the gas tank. And then calls her just so that she can come out and have a confrontation
like
with
mayhem.
Him. And yeah. And then he stares out the window and he's just, like, grinning. He's a
or
guy.
Or, like, when he calls... What's his name's like when he pits the two brothers against each other,
yeah.
And he makes the one attack the other with the hockey stick,
yeah,
just to like fuck with them for the
yeah,
sake of
yeah,
right.
Them.
Isn't he like a god of mayhem or something? He's kind of that,
like a Loki, like trickster god,
yeah, there you
approach
go.
Almost,
yeah.
Like, none of these things are part of his plan, none of these things are things he has to do, but he's stopping because he likes causing chaos and destruction.
And there's no reason for him to get involved with Lester at all,
no,
he just does,
no, not like, at all.
Yeah,
and he calls that suspicious looking real estate office where he gets his orders and says, I have to stay in town for a couple days just for a personal reason, so he can murder Sam Hess for no reason other than to like corrupt Lester, basically.
Yeah, he does want to corrupt Lester,
and I think that's a point that like Holly actually made specifically is like a. What if we took a guy who's basically like a normal guy and then kind of like poisoned him with this idea of committing violence?
Mm-hmm.
And Melvo is almost this guy who like goes around and kind of poisons people.
Jingle jingle. Mm-hmm.
Why do you keep saying jingle?
Because
jingle?
Because he does that cheek cheek, like there's a little like jingle jingle sound every time something bad's gonna happen. You guys didn't notice it?
No.
What?
What are you talking about?
What? Oh my god, it's the most obvious thing that almost annoys me. Every time there's like, oh my god, it's the Malvo sound. So
Malvo sound? I wasn't noticing.
What? Are you guys kidding? It's happened like 7 or 8 times already just in 3 episodes. There's like this little like a rain, you know, like a bell sound, like a jingle bell, like a jingle jingle.
Okay.
And it happens. Oh my god, this is so weird because it's a big part of the music.
I'm gonna have to pay more attention to this.
Yeah, because so something will happen where like something will be triggered like in Lester's mind that's obviously something corrupt, and there's like that little jingle jingle sound because it's a Malvo thing.
Wow.
And it's so it's what's that word when you're like really setting the like tone really thick? I can't. It's this word. I'm so tired. I hate when I lose my words. You know what I mean? But it's like so. You know, and it's like setting the scene.
I know what
you know what I'm saying, right? But it's like such a marker of like,
I know
what
you're saying.
Something bad is happening, and it's a jingle jingle sound. It's
right.
For him, which I'm so surprised. Oh my god, I'm so surprised you haven't noticed it, because it also kind of made me think like, is this a very strange bad Santa reference? Because it's like a little
because it sounds like jingle bells.
It sounds like two little jingle bells, like a ching ching. Like,
I can't believe I hadn't noticed this at all, but I'm going to be on the lookout for
it
this.
It happens all the time. This is blowing my mind.
The Malfo sound. Okay,
it's
shit.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and it'll happen sometimes. He'll be in the scene, but it happens a lot of time when he's not in the scene. And then there's like a, even like Molly will notice like, oh my God, like something's happening, right? And it's like a jingle jingle.
It's part of the score. You're saying it's part
of the score. Yeah, it's part of the score, but it's obvious. Oh, I'm so surprised.
I really like the score of this overall.
It's
because once again, it feels a lot like the Fargo score,
right?
I think the tone
is great, and I guess it's doing a good job because you're not even noticing this jingle jingle. But that to me is the only thing that like really stood out in the music, where it's like really setting the tone like a little too obviously. But I mean, it's good because you don't notice it. That's how I feel like music is good, is when you don't like notice it too much too. It just like feels right in it, and it's not distracting. I guess
I think the music is overall used basically just the right amount, and it does have that great orchestral feel that sounds like a Carter Burwell score.
Mm-hmm.
It works, but I'm gonna have to pay attention to this motif. You're catching stuff I'm not catching. That's great.
That's so weird.
But yeah, overall the sound and also the feel of this, it's interesting because we've been watching a bunch of Coen Brothers movies back to back, but now we're diving into TV for the first time, and it's interesting that this does seem to kind of capture the feel of the movie, but still looks different. It looks like a TV show.
It does. It looks like a high-def TV show.
Yeah, it looks like a high-def TV show.
Because it is.
I think There's less wide open spaces in the TV show than there is in the movie. It feels a little bit more like we're in kind of like a normal city. We're spending more time in, you know, just basic two shots and more typical setups. None of that is bad, exactly. It just doesn't feel quite as cinematic. But it feels...
Yeah, because I feel like a TV show rather than a movie. But I'm feeling it, honestly, because I feel like... Well, it's just like interesting to have like similar tones and feels, but also it's just like developing way more. So it's like a little bit more like at the end of a movie, that's the end of the movie, right? So we come on the podcast and be like, well, what do you think it meant? And right. Now it's like, wait, it's developing. So it's, you're just like...
It's very different when you're caught up in the ongoing story.
Yeah. It's a cool feeling.
Although, and I have no idea if this is going to be a spoiler for you, actually.
Jesus.
But this is something you should know going in.
Jingle sound.
This story wraps up in 10 episodes. And everything that happens in season 2 happens with a completely different set of characters.
I was afraid that was true, but you did ruin it for me, so thanks.
Oh, you didn't know
you
that?
You were afraid that was true?
Yeah, I don't know anything.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I guess because I... From that article I read that was spoilers about a new cast for season 2.
Which was your own fault, not my fault.
I still blame you for somehow making me think about Fargo as a TV show at all. So therefore, if I read something about Fargo and it spoils it for me, it's your fault.
Okay.
No, but I kind of figured, like, I guessed it might have been like a True Detective type of feel. But that annoys me. I wish the story kept going longer, but fine.
I think it's way better to like have it wrap up, you know, and put a bow on it after 10 episodes rather than like trying to drag it out indefinitely.
I think so too. I think the fact that this is a self-contained story that like Holly came into the FX bosses with like a 115 page outline outlining exactly what was going to happen start to finish throughout the whole show before he wrote a single word.
Wow.
Like the whole arc of this season is a very carefully plotted story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I think that helps this feel like a really cohesive work that doesn't have to worry about like keeping cliffhangers open for the end of the season or anything like that. Because when you do have an open-ended TV show, it can be a lot more shapeless.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did he, in terms of the Coens' involvement, did he go to them first and get their blessing, or like how prepared was he like with? How thought out the story was, like when he talked to the or do you know that?
I believe the story is that like FX for some reason had already acquired the rights to doing a TV show based on Fargo, and FX went to Noah Hawley and said, "We want to make a Fargo TV show. What do you think you could do with this?"
Interesting.
Then they weren't necessarily thinking of it being the miniseries style there, anyways.
Mm.
But they did tell him, "Do you think you could do a Fargo without Marge?" Because they said, because presumably either getting like Frances McDormand or whatever to reprise their roles would have been prohibitively expensive.
Oh.
So they'd wanted to start over with new characters.
Right.
But other than that, they basically gave him a blank slate, and this is what he came back with. And it really does. I've said it already, but it's amazing how well it matches the source material.
It makes me want to make a TV show out of one of their other movies too.
let's go there. What now that this is?
I think it's for our business podcast. Okay. Though, no, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
It'll be a preview of our business podcast. Considering how well this worked out, if you were to turn another Coen Brothers movie into a TV show, what would you pick?
My favorite movies are the
Know it can be done.
Yeah, well, so my favorite movies are too similar, right? So they're Fargo and No Country and Blood Simple. And
I could see No Country for Old Men being a kind of TV show.
Yeah, but there's too much of that in this one. So it would be old. It'd be like, it's like a dark thing with a serial killer type of person or like people senseless
The tones are so different. You know, Fargo's kind of goofy. And I think that goofiness and that regional humor totally carries
but
over
not
here.
In the, well, even this, even it's not the, that goofy. The TV show isn't that goofy. It's,
even the
I think
TV
it's less
show,
goofy.
You know, in the episode we just watched this morning, you know, Molly's like talking to her friend. She's talking about the spiders crawling out of her boyfriend's
neck. That was like
neck.
A rare moment. That was like rare goofiness, I think.
And then it comes back later. They're just sharing milkshakes. And I mean, it's a sweet moment.
It's still overall pretty dark, though. I wouldn't do another one in this town.
I think the story arc is dark, but I do. I think that. Part of what makes that what sells that darkness is there's a lot of funny moments and really funny performances. I think Bob Odenkirk as Bill the Sheriff is really funny.
He is really funny.
He's great. And
I agree.
And we'll talk more about him as we go, but already I think you can see, I think what makes him effective as an antagonist for Molly is that he is an idiot about the way he's going about this case, and he is kind of delusional, but he's not like a total asshole. And he recognizes that Molly's good at her job. He's just like, he's just trying to,
idiot.
He's basically just trying to protect his buddy.
Yeah. No, I still think it's overall dark. So I wouldn't want another dark show like this. Like, there's too many, like, True Detective, like,
yeah.
Fargo. It's like, too... Another, like, I fucking hate blood.
Yes.
Why do I have to have a TV show with blood in it?
Another show based around, like, an anti-hero with, like, murder and... Yeah, you don't want one of those.
Not really. Too hard for me to watch, so it'd be hard for me to create. But,
It actually was a criticism when Fargo the show came out from some corners. It's like, do we really need another anti-hero show on TV?
Yeah.
Because there's
a lot.
It's
a little much. It's a little much. But it's... I mean, I think it's great. I really like it, but it's a little much. I think I do...
There is, like, a Breaking Bad... quality to Fargo also in terms of,
I haven't,
like,
seen Breaking Bad.
You've never seen Breaking
No.
Bad?
No.
I know.
Because I'm afraid to dive into it because then I know... I just don't have the time for it right now.
Right.
I don't have those 17 hours in a row to watch it, so I'm scared.
Well, would it be too much of a spoiler to say that it also involves a good man
who starts indulging
his dark impulses?
Oh my God, can you stop?
Okay. Yeah, and that's in that sense, there's... I mean, there, yeah, there's a really kind of direct parallel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except I think Lester starts kind of discovers his dark side much faster.
Absolutely.
Considering, yeah, he kills his wife in the first episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God, I think I might do Barton Fink as a TV show.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's so controversial.
Would almost have like a Twin Peaks character to it. Like,
I haven't kind watched of Twin Peaks.
Something almost very surreal, like a surreal look at kind of Hollywood.
I think I would do a mix of Barton Fink and a serious man.
What about Big Lebowski? Like, just that...
Well,
that
yeah, I guess everyone would love it. Like, that'd be like an entourage. So.
Oh, yeah. just
like...
But hotter women.
Yeah.
I could see, like a 28-minute Showtime show that's like the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Just kind of like a dramedy
right.
about what's like this L.A. bowling league and the crazy characters mm-hmm. who interact with it.
That would be a good
or
one.
Or Inside, I feel like Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, the only official one she has.
Well... Spoiler, I think maybe it could be a TV
show. Oh, God! You're saying
how
it has certain
you?
Plot points that spoiler lend themselves? I hate people. Yeah, I hate Dan right now for spoiling it. Cool. No, yeah, that's interesting. Mm. Wait, is Adam Goldberg in that one?
In which one?
Inside Llewyn Davis?
He is not.
Oh, who's the main guy in it?
A guy named
Oscar Isaac.
Oh, but he kind of looks like him.
Kind of. Kind of, yeah.
Like, in my mind, because I haven't seen it,
He's got the beard like Adam Goldberg has here.
I just inserted Adam Goldberg's face yeah. on him.
Can we talk
right
about
now?
How cool Adam Goldberg and the other guy, like the hitman
yeah.
character are in Fargo?
Yeah.
Yeah. Adam Goldberg's really
awesome.
Hot, too. Sorry.
He went to my high school.
Ooh.
What?
He was older than me, obviously, but...
How much older?
Yeah,
I don't think we ever were at school at the same time. I think mm-hmm. he graduated by the time I was there, but...
I like that Oakwood. Beard look.
Oakwood
that's why.
Yeah, he does have that bearded Jewish guy look.
Yeah,
which is actually,
I love the bearded Jewish guy look.
Which is actually funny because, yeah, like in Days of Confused, he was the biggest nerd in the movie. So it's nice to see him age into that.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. I digress.
No, he is great in this. And his deaf partner, also, who was also in There Will Be Blood. Great
oh,
in this.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was in There Will Be Blood?
You remember Daniel Plainview's deaf son? The adult version?
No. I don't remember it.
Oh,
it was so long
yeah.
ago when I watched it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, he's really deaf?
I believe the actor is... Oh, look that up, but I believe the actor is really deaf. Yes.
That's so cool.
Yeah. But, yeah, from their very first scene together and their sign language interactions, and you can tell both of them have so much comfort with the sign language and interacting with each other, it instantly establishes these are guys who've worked together for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that really effectively... And they are really cool together.
Yeah, they're just so fun to watch. I don't know. They're yeah. And I was talking with somebody about it, and she pointed out that like they are kind of like the equivalent of the Steve Buscemi and the other guy character
Gear.
In Fargo.
Yeah.
In the Fargo movie.
Yeah.
Which I sort of agree with because like she was saying that the deaf guy is kind of like. The silent guy in Fargo.
Well, yeah, okay, so yeah, basically Carl and Gare in Fargo, it's the out of towner, the guy who clearly doesn't belong in Fargo, and the mute.
Right.
So in this case, the mute guy is only mute because he's deaf, not just because he's like a silent
right.
psycho. And then the out of towner guy is not very Steve Buscemi like, but he is kind of like it's like a New Yorker in the Midwest for some reason.
Yeah.
Adam Goldberg is 44.
Okay.
That's weird. Because he was saying he went to his high school, but a long time ago, basically.
Okay, so you weren't in the same class or anything.
Yeah, well, I'm 42.
You know, you look great.
Thanks.
Supposedly, Quentin Tarantino went to UC Santa Cruz for a brief period. And also had apparently had sex in the elevator in my dorm.
Whoa.
That is the legend.
How do you know that?
It was the legend that was going around when I was there.
Okay.
So they say, at least. Anyway, that's apropos of nothing. So, pretty well-known, again, out of her four main characters, three of them are pretty well-known actors. Colin Hanks, Billy Bob Thornton, and Martin Freeman. Alison Tolman, who plays Molly, was a big unknown before Fargo started.
Mm-hmm.
She was, you know, picked out, I think, just because she really embodies that Midwestern cop vibe perfectly. And she's got such an expressive face with those, like, those big eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very expressive, very striking.
Yeah. And the bangs, I know you must love.
They're side bangs, dude.
Whatever.
But they're still cute.
Still.
I'll allow it.
But she is really good in this too, and she's really smart, and she's funny, even if nobody else in Minnesota seems to understand her sense of humor.
Yeah.
And it's great, and even though we start out empathizing with Lester, as soon as we realize, okay, this isn't somebody we really want to empathize with, Molly becomes kind of our center and our grounding throughout the show.
Well, it was funny because she started off seeming kind of dumb.
Did she?
For the first, like, 2 seconds, like, I don't remember exactly what it was when Vern was talking to her, but there was something about it that was like, oh, that's cute. Like, she didn't, like, quite know what she was doing.
Well, she starts out seeming like kind of the dubby sidekick to the chief, right?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't remember exactly what it was, but she kind of seemed like a little, like,
it's another way. Cute. But it's another way the pilot really pulls the rug out from under you.
Exactly. Because so when I was looking at that, I was like, this fucking TV show. Of course they make the girl, the stupid character who's an idiot, who doesn't know how to do anything, and then it turns out I was wrong, so... I was about to get all, you know.
Super, you know, sexist of you.
Well, I like to get really feminazi on, on everything Coen Brothers.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They've really improved over time, I will say.
Total feminazi.
No, yeah.
Not at all.
Scorched earth feminazi. No, yeah. But no, because they do a lot of that kind of shit.
Castrate all men.
Yeah. No, like, in a lot of their older stuff, they're like a little bit like, this has always been my complaint about their stuff, is like out of touch with like the woman characters, or like the woman characters are not strong enough in a certain way, but then they've improved with time, I think, as they've gotten like more female protagonists.
I think they've matured in that way as well.
I think they have. Like, I would actually say it's a mature, like, I've seen the growth like over time in their movies, which is interesting. But so in the TV show, I was like, they're making her the dummy character.
Right.
Like, that's messed up. Like, Marge was like the star, and like she's the one who solved it. And now there's like this dummy girl who's the girl.
And it turns out like the chief has like a pregnant wife. So you think, okay, maybe she's the Marge analog in some way.
Well, yeah, they connected that way. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But I didn't, you know, him dying so soon in was like, what?
Yeah, because he's this total calm presence and confident presence, and he seems like such a good guy. So when he dies, it's destabilizing in that way also.
Yeah.
It's already just a very interesting kind of mix of threads we've got going on here, with Lester trying to cover his tracks and Molly investigating the crime, and now Malvo's off doing something completely different. He's investigating Stavros Milos, the supermarket king.
Yeah.
Played another Coen Brothers reference I noticed there is that the kind of loudmouth fat guy and his dumb son could almost be straight out of Miller's Crossing. Where you've got Johnny Casper as kind of the dumb gangster, and then like his son, who's like kind of an idiot who he slaps around a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot he has a son because I was asleep during Miller's Crossing.
But it's a similar character dynamic, and actually, like kind of big, fat, loudmouth characters show up in Coen Brothers movies a lot. Oliver Platt's not exactly that. Yeah, Oliver Platt's not exactly that, but he's kind of playing with that archetype a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Although he also appears to be more religious, and so easily kind of taken aback by like the weird biblical pranks, I guess, that Malvo is playing on him.
Right.
It's part of what makes Lorne Malvo such a fun character is he's clearly having so much fun with his job.
Yeah. You love watching him just
right. No,
just
I don't love watching him kill a dog.
No, well, that's true. But
yeah, the things just got real right now. Oh, so sad.
But
especially the dog's face when he came outside and he was like, gonna kill him,
so,
and you're
trusting.
Like, no.
Just seeing this guy like at work, like, executing his plans. Just like, you know, just casually walking through the house, replacing his pills, and then walking back out. It's a really fun performance.
Yeah.
Billy Bob's perfect for it.
Billy Bob's killing it. And his bowl haircut, so weird and gross. Yes.
Kind of like Shiger had like a bowl haircut.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
There are really similarities there.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's like taking just a bunch of pieces of Coen Brothers movies and kind of jumbling them all together to make a totally new story.
Yeah. Well, I think even just his look, just because as we're talking about it, makes me think of it. It was really interesting to me how they didn't make him like white haired Billy Bob Thornton. They were like, they actively decided to make him this like brown haired, yeah. but like, you know, and dyed his beard, I guess, or whatever. And so he looks kind of younger, but then you can see his eyes are kind of like so old. And it was just like an interesting mix that they like chose to make him look that way. So, because especially because somebody called him like a young fella at some point too. And I was like, he's not a young fella, but
yeah, no, he looks
like, it's like unclear what's going on with him.
He looks younger here than he did in like The Man Who Wasn't There.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's an interesting take. Mm-hmm. I mean, that takes us just about to the end of the story through this first three. But a lot of intriguing threads have been set up to pick up in future episodes. Do you guys have any other further thoughts about these three episodes?
I'd like Dan to talk more. I've been really hogging this episode.
You're
on the spot. Go.
Well, this isn't related to the episodes necessarily, but I want to tell the story.
Okay.
On the Coen Brothers podcast because
I met
the Coen Brothers one time. I interviewed to be their assistant.
What?
Josh?
Tell me everything!
I knew I had to tell a story somewhere, so I figured I'd just do it now.
That was a good reveal.
I interviewed with the two of them to be their assistant. This was like four years ago now.
Do they live in L.A.?
No, they're in New York.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I would have had to move to New York, but they were in L.A., and I knew their previous assistant. He was sort of a friend of a friend, and I had sat down and had coffee with him once, and he was going to be moving, you know, he knew he had been working with them for several years, and he knew he was going to be leaving, and so called me and asked if I would be interested, and I was like, of course. And so then a couple months later, he called me and was like, hey, Joel and Ethan are going to be in L.A. next weekend, like, do you want to have breakfast with them and like, or, you know, meet up with them and interview with them. And so I met them at their hotel. They had breakfast.
What did they eat?
Joel had...
What did they order?
Joel had oatmeal and Ethan had French toast.
Oh, sounds like, yep, Joel is the conservative one and Ethan's the crazy one who has French toast. And makes total sense.
Yeah. And they were so super, super nice, super smart, you know, thoughtful guys, as you'd imagine. Joel was definitely the more talkative one, and Ethan was a little more quiet and reserved. Mm-hmm. And they asked me if I wanted to order anything. I felt bad about ordering something, so I didn't. Although I regret, I should have ordered like
pancakes,
six things.
Get
and
pancakes.
Then like
should have gone
just
pancakes.
Eaten for
they would have
hours.
Liked the restaurant.
They would have liked pancakes.
And I didn't end up getting the job, unfortunately. But you know, I got to sit down with like two of the greatest American filmmakers
and have a casual chat.
Them?
Yeah.
Well, they asked me about my experience and stuff like that. I made them laugh one time.
Nice. Because
it wasn't even anything really funny that I said, but when I was in college, I was in charge of the Ivy Film Festival at Brown, and our keynote event the year I was in charge was a panel with Robert Evans, Brad Grey, and Jack Nicholson. And they like looked at each other. The thought of like Robert Evans and Jack Nicholson on stage together, they like looked at each other and like chuckled a little bit. And
that's what made them laugh.
Yeah.
I could see them just kind of chuckling to each other about their little inside jokes.
Yeah.
That sounds like them.
And you know, they talked about what the job would be. It's like, it's an intense job because you like, you're basically in charge of you run their production company, but then you also like, you do everything for them. So there's like, they own an apartment building in Tribeca, and they're like, you know, so like, our current, you know, if something happens there, it's funny that you brought up being a handyman at the beginning of the episode, because I would have had to like, you know, fix the toilets in the apartment building that they own in Tribeca for the tenants, which would have been terrible.
But you know what? I mean, even if that's a dramatic job, I don't think they'd be bad bosses.
I think they'd be. They seemed like they would be very understanding. I would just have to, you know, Google a lot about how to fix toilets and whatnot.
And, well, now there's an app for it.
Yes.
Yeah. All the handyman.
Right,
apps.
Right.
Give them $20 or whatever.
And they asked me if, you know, how I was at technology. And I'm terrible at technology, but I very coyly said I was, you know, okay
yeah.
at it.
Yeah.
And because they still, like, they don't use any sort of, like, Final Draft software to write their scripts.
There's
just like, I think they just like write them in
on a typewriter or something?
Not a typewriter, but like just Word. Like Word. Yeah. If you've seen like the script for like True Grit, it's like, it's just formatted it just like a Word document. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. They're
yeah,
like,
it's like
very,
we don't need fancy screenwriting software.
And, yeah. They're very yeah, old
we're
school.
We're like fucking
like
Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
I'm incredibly jealous of you.
That's so awesome.
I want to know if you still have their numbers so we could hit them up to be on the podcast.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll say it on the air.
Yeah. So that everybody can call them and ask them to be on the podcast.
Dial in now.
Well, I don't know. If that position ever opens up again, I'm going to apply for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will move to Tribeca. I will move into their apartment and become their new like conciliary.
Yeah, I would do that too.
Or whatever they need.
I'll quit being a lawyer.
Yeah. We'll do it. We'll be like double assistants.
Yeah, they like doubles.
They like doubles.
Oh my God, yes. The two of us should do it. It's so like, not exactly meta, but it is like self-referential since we have a Coen Brothers podcast. Oh, this is perfect. Cool.
This seems like, what better qualification to be your assistants than like the hours and hours of footage we've recorded talking about your body of work?
Yeah, yeah. No offense, Dan, but we're going to be a better
team. Now, you guys are totally more qualified than I was.
And I am handy.
Yes. I think we have complementary skills.
I think so too.
I think between us, we could basically get anything done.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
That is a fact.
There we go.
Boom.
I thought of a couple more things, okay, before we wrap this up.
That was the best story ever, though, by the way.
That was a really good. That was awesome.
Thank you for not telling us until you got on the podcast. That's
yeah.
amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So every episode of this show opens with the disclaimer that this is a true story.
Yes.
The names have been changed. Ugh. But out of respect for the dead, the rest has been told exactly as it occurred.
Ugh,
and you said that you might be able to make a legal challenge to that disclaimer.
Oh. Well, like, when you have, like, consumer products, and I'm not, like, the number one authority on, like, FCC law, but, like, you have to be really careful about what you advertise to consumers and like, what your disclaimers say. And I guess this is going to be, like, I'm sure there's some allowance for this because it's, like, art or entertainment or some shit. But, like, it just seems misleading to consumers to make them think that. And, like, I personally, like, believe that. And then, well, when I first saw Fargo, I really believed that. And I was like, what? Except I also kind of didn't because it was too literal. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. But it is a bit misleading.
You said, I'm not so sure.
Yeah. So it's misleading to consumers, and I think there's a little.
I think it's
claim.
You should bring them. Yeah. I feel like if you bring them to court, then that'll be like an in for no, like a way for you to introduce yourselves to them and be like, I'm really handy,
and I know the law. Yeah. No, but I'm sure that there is some. I just don't know it specifically, but there has to be an allowance for it because I'm sure the legal team didn't like overlook that they can't
do this. I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
But I just like to point things out.
I guess it just means you're allowed to call things true stories even if they're not.
Yeah, which is weird. Because they're like, well, it's part of the movie.
I love that they decide not to just have the disclaimer in the beginning, but to keep bringing it back every single episode just to really affirm this.
Ugh, it's so annoying.
And again, going back to, there's a couple really good interviews of Noah Hawley online where he describes a lot of his thinking behind the show. Ooh. But he talked about how freeing that disclaimer is, basically to make a story that doesn't just feel like a typical hero's journey where you can predict every move that happens next, but to make a movie that kind of like Fargo feels a little lumpy. And feels like a real story. He mentioned asking himself, okay, so what is like the Mike Yanagita of this story? And by what he meant is, what are kind of the weird elements that don't really seem like they're part of the main plot?
I had to think about who Mike Yanagita, but then I realized who you're talking about. Okay. Right.
So I think
spoiler, there's a Mike Yanagita coming.
But I think even in the episodes we watched, like, yeah, Molly's just sitting down at a hotel to have lunch with her best with one of her old friends.
Yeah, that's true. That
and again, it seems like almost a direct reference because nothing in that meal really applies directly to the plot or anything. It's not a scene that has to be in there for plot reasons.
Well, that's a spoiler because now I know I don't have to pay attention to that scene.
Okay.
I just wanted Dan to know what this means in my mind.
I know. I feel like every word I say is like a potential landmine.
You have to walk on eggshells around me. Yeah. It's an abusive co-host relationship.
It is. I'm sorry.
What did you say?
I'm sorry, Jackie. I'm sorry.
Josh is cowering right now because no one can see your face. Oh.
But okay, one last question before we wrap this up. Because this isn't one that I really think I know the answer to myself, even after watching the entire series. The poster in Lester's basement. Did you notice the poster, Jackie?
Yeah.
It's a poster with the fish on it. All the mm-hmm. fish are going one way, but there's another fish going the other way. And it says, what if everyone else is wrong and you're right? Why do you think that's there? Or what do you think that means?
Dan, you can go ahead first.
I'm thinking.
Oh, okay. Then I'll talk in the meantime.
Yeah.
Because, okay, I don't know why it got there, although obviously there's some shit on his fridge, too, that's some inspirational quotes. So there is a thing about his wife having all these, like, inspirational messages and stuff everywhere.
His wife, by the way, seems like a real character, even if she's Conan in the first episode.
Uh-huh.
Just like a, yeah.
She's...
Just imagining trying to live with that person.
Yeah.
Well, so she has all these, like, inspirational quote things, but it was down in the basement, so it wasn't in a prominent area, so it also wasn't, like, the number one highest priority, like... Right. Message or whatever, or motto. But I mean, I think that's there for him as a trigger, because he starts looking at it like, you know, he's obviously going crazy, but like it's feeding his ability to be crazy, because he like keeps seeing those words, and like the right. blood is on the words. So like I think it's like enabling him,
but it's like I'm sort not of sure a, why it's... a justification for him, you know. It's like obviously everybody would say like,
yes, you're wrong to
your
kill
wife
your wife.
Is wrong, but except, like, what if they're
except for
wrong?
That, except for that
right.
one, guy, yeah. except for that one guy who we right. met at the hospital who said, "You know what? I would kill her in your situation."
Because I don't think he feels guilty about what he did. You know, or it doesn't seem like there's much guilt or remorse there. He feels like it was right or okay, acceptable in a way. You know, despite there being a pretty prevalent anti-murder sentiment in society.
In general, I think most people were against killing your wife or husband. But what if we're all crazy and he's the sane one?
That's the question.
And you should be killing your spouses.
You got so excited. Yes, you're like jumping out of your seat.
Yes. This is the message of the show. I think we've hit upon it.
I think so. I think we got it.
Okay. Well, then I'm just going to leave that question dangling, and we're going to move on to our final segment of the show, which is when we play a game, and it's called Raising Arquizoda. Unless you need to run to the bathroom first, Jackie.
No.
You're good?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. We don't have to take a break?
No.
Okay.
So presumptuous.
I don't know. Usually this is when you take a break.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I do a little running to the bathroom motion with my, like, you know, fingers. Like a person today?
That's true. That's a mm-hmm. good point. Okay.
Would you like a person, like, like showing like, down? Yeah.
So I put together a slightly different type of game for today's show.
All right.
Because... this show features Stavros Milos, the supermarket king.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be fun to do some sort of Price is Right style guessing game. So here's what I put together. I found a website online. It's called the Random Amazon Item Generator.
Okay.
Basically, it just pulls out random items that are on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And it pulled up a bunch of those items. And I'm going to tell you what those items are and... we're going to take turns going, who's going to go first. But one of you guys is going to guess a price mm-hmm. for that item. Then the other person will say high or low, whether you think that price is too high or too low.
Okay.
And if you think, and if that person is right, then they get a point. And if they're wrong, then the other player gets a point.
Okay. What if you think it's correct?
What?
I think it's exactly...
oh, if it's exactly odd? Yeah. I think it's extremely unlikely that's going to happen. But if you manage to nail it immediately, then the other person doesn't even get to say high or low. You just get the point.
Oh, okay.
But
I'm saying, like, oh, so you have to say higher or lower then.
Right.
Right.
Got it.
Because
you would know right away whether it's exactly on point or not. That was kind of my
issue. John just thought this out.
I just want to test him out.
Yeah. No, I have thought.
It's my job to vet the process.
You're right. And there have been times in the past where my questions haven't always been perfect or the game hasn't always been thought through.
That's right. And we had to veto some of those questions.
You had to veto questions.
We had to strike questions. Jake Ryu and I were a fan of that.
All right. So... here's the first item from the random Amazon item generator.
You're showing it to us?
I am going to show it to you. It's this poster.
Yeah, but I don't... your hands...
It says success.
Success.
Which is written vertically. And
see your goal. Understand the obstacle. Create a positive mental picture. And so on and so on. It stands for success.
No, we should stay there. Well, okay. How much is that poster?
It's a 28-inch success poster. Motivational.
I just want to open up my Amazon app.
Who's so guessing here?
All right. So, Dan, you're going to guess first, and Jackie will guess. And Jackie will say hi or low.
Is it a frame? Is it framed or is it just?
It's just a poster.
Just a poster. I'll say $14.95.
Lower.
It was $13.99, which means Jackie.
Boom,
gets
baby! Right. I know my posters.
Well done. Well,
that's one thing that I know. I'm getting really ahead of myself. I love to come
out. Can we acknowledge that was a very good guess?
It was a great guess, but mine was better.
It was a great guess, Dan. But that's why I'm saying you're almost never going to get the price exactly right. So. It's going to be high or low. All right. Next up, I'm not going to show you the picture for all of them, but I'll show it to you when it makes the picture clearer. This is a best-selling jewelry tattoo mega pack. They're temporary tattoos that look like jewelry, and there's 40 of them. And Jackie, wait, you're going to guess the price.
There's 40 tattoos that look like jewelry. They're like silver and gold.
Is 40 temporary tattoos that look like jewelry.
40 of them. Like bracelets, rings, like describe what's in there.
Okay.
The mega pack must have a lot of different things.
The best-selling and most popular Flash-inspired temporary tattoos as seen on Beyonce. Meraki goddess tattoos add flair and sparkle to every outfit at occasion. I guess they're just... it looks like it's actually like you can tattoo a bracelet on your wrist. It looks like a bracelet.
40 of them.
Yes. Oh, and by the way, whoever gets to 5 points first wins. That's how I figure out who's the winner.
Oh, okay. $24.99.
Jackie says $24.99.
I'm gonna say lower.
It's $24.95.
What?
Which means Dan gets a point.
I just broke your mic.
I know.
That was insane.
I know.
We're so good. Dan and I are so good.
You guys are really good at this game.
Holy shit! What? I cannot believe this. I don't know whether to be happy or really angry.
I know. Well, you should feel good. You are good.
Wow.
Look, both you guys are good so far, and both you guys are tied.
Holy
I feel like this
crap.
Game's going on point so far.
Wow.
Okay.
$24.95.
Next item is unfinished wooden sled.
How big is the sled?
You know, I'm trying to click on this link, and the link has disappeared, but I still saved the price. I think this is no longer actually on sale. It was just like an individual seller who was selling an unfinished wooden sled. Yes.
And
I remember the description said, like, you can paint this sled.
What is it made out of?
Paint it.
It's made of wood.
Made of wood.
It's a wooden sled.
Fully wooden?
It's unfinished wooden sled.
But 100% wood?
Yeah.
Josh, I feel weird about this question. I don't have enough information. Like, what kind of wood? Balsa wood? Teak wood? Kona wood?
It's wood.
That's not acceptable.
I'm going to say $40.
All right. Dan says $40.
I'm going to say more.
It's $34.95.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry, Dan gets the point.
2-1.
I like your enthusiasm for this game, though. That makes it even better.
I like that. I mean, at the end, we win all the items that we correctly get.
Josh buys them for us.
Oh, yeah. You're going to get the sled and the tattoos.
Awesome.
Oh, will you give me the tattoos? Though? I want them.
Yes.
So I can be with Beyonce.
You can share them. There's 40 of them.
That's true.
Okay. And this is a big one, guys. It's really exciting. It's a medical marijuana clinic marketing plan and business plan.
That's just it's a plan.
it's an 8-chapter complete marketing plan of how to set up your own medical marijuana clinic.
8 chapters?
It doesn't even appear to be a book. It's a Word document.
$19.99.
Jackie says $19.99. Dan, you going high or low?
Higher.
Okay. It's $24.95.
Oh, fuck off. Ugh.
Yeah, you can't just give that stuff away.
Yeah. I mean, this is a highly developed
plan. I was thinking about like this artist management book that I got that was a PDF, and it was 300 pages, and it was $19.99. So,
all right.
I guess it was realistic.
For those of you keeping score at home, it is now 3-1.
Okay, Dan.
Okay. This is a Scott Bakula Quantum Leap tuxedo poster.
Oh, that's awesome. It doesn't even say, there's no writing on it. It's just a picture of Scott Bakula.
It's just a picture of Scott Bakula with like a bow tie.
And it's 24 by 36.
24 by 36.
I'll say $16.99.
Okay.
That's a good number.
Jackie, high or low?
Well, I guess there's no point to look at you because you don't know.
I don't know.
I have to try to read Josh's mind.
Right.
Lower?
It's $24.95.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow, Dan is running away with this game all of a sudden.
You know what? This is fucked.
Hold on. It's not... It's this clearly, not it's over. Not over.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody puts baby in a corner.
Okay, well, this could be it.
Shut up. I know how to keep score.
Okay, this is an issue of Score Adult Magazine for March 2001.
The return of
Lethal Weapons. She's got some big titties.
Ugh. Those are not small.
Oh, but they're so nasty.
So, Jackie, I think you're guessing the price here.
I don't know how much vintage porn magazines sell for. What the hell?
You're not a Lethal Weapons fan?
No, give me another temporary tattoos question so I can almost kill it. I knew this would happen, by the way, because I was such a shithead about being so close on the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, no, because I won the first one, so I started getting really cocky right away. This is karma, people. I don't have... $21.
All right. Jackie says $21.
I'm going to say lower.
It's $16.94. So Dan gets it.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, 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 ding. Dan is the winner. Well, that was more lopsided than I thought it was going to be. Anyway, you guys were doing so well to start.
Jackie. Look, we both did really well.
To see how long I couldn't talk. Not for very long, people. This game sucked. I'm the worst, but I was cool for a second.
I had more fun stuff, too, but it's all right.
I mean, to be fair.
Good job, well, you Dan. Can change to the rules. Fair. It doesn't have to be up to 5. It could be up to 10.
It's true. But I don't think Dan wants to fritter away his lead.
I mean, I don't want to just embarrass you when 10-1.
Challenge not accepted. Let's end this episode.
All right. It's time to wrap things up, guys, in that case. But Dan, it's been a real pleasure to have you.
Yeah, this has been awesome. Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for coming here to talk about Fargo. You're not going to be here for the future Fargo episodes because we're going to have a couple other guests in to say their thoughts on the
Fine.
Show.
Fine.
Yeah.
But it continues to be really good. Spoiler alert.
Jesus.
It's still good.
Now
it's still
I know
good.
It's a good show, huh?
Yeah. It's a good show.
Fucked up.
Dan, if people want to find stuff you do on the internet, where should they go?
Oh, I guess Twitter at Dan Wolfberg.
At Dan Wolfberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I see you sometimes, you know, with like funny at midnight hashtag tweets.
Yeah, I'm all about the at midnight tweets.
Yeah. You have good ones.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you.
Something about fish tank, tap that.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, I mean, no spoilers.
I don't want to spoil it, guys, but just go to the page.
Yeah, you check it out yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Jackie?
My Twitter sucks. You can follow me anyway. MACQUELINE.
Do you want people to follow you on Instagram?
I think so. Because, like, there's nothing. I mean, my Instagram just feels a little bit more private, sort of, than my Twitter. So you would have to, like, listen to an episode of this show to get to the information about my Instagram. So I guess I'm
right.
Should I put it out there, you guys?
It's up to you. It's all up to you. You don't have to.
Dan's only nodding.
Yeah.
Do it.
I mean, there's nothing bad on my Instagram.
Right.
It's just, so my Instagram is full metal Jackie, but there's periods after full period metal period Jackie. And my Instagram is better than my Twitter. So
just like a woman, there's periods inside.
Wow!
Oh, no.
Get out! Get out of your own house!
You broke my microphone again!
Yeah, because you're... Wow, get out!
That was a good joke. Come
that's
on.
That's annoying.
That was a good joke.
But, wait, but yeah, so my Instagram used to be, like, private, and then, like, I didn't let anybody follow me, so I don't really have that many followers, but, like, now it's public, so I'll accept followers, so, yeah, whatever. Check out my cool photos. They're cool.
Yeah, whatever. See? Cool. Just being totally cool about it. Yeah, you can check it out if you want to, or whatever.
I'm not self-conscious about it. It's just I try to be somewhat private on the internet, since I'm not that private on the internet.
Yeah.
But, so, like, my name isn't on my Instagram. That's the thing. But now you guys know. Listeners of this show get the benefit of knowing what my Instagram is. Everybody else can die.
So don't share that information if anybody is not a listener of this show. If they want to see Jackie's Instagram, tell them, listen to Accept the Mystery first.
That's right. That's the only way you can figure out my Instagram.
That's the only way.
It's exactly.
The only way. Guys, keep it between yourselves. Mm-hmm. Please, for me and Jackie and Dan. You can find me on Twitter at Radio TFB. You can find other stuff I do at joshrichmond.net. And followed by Twitter, I've been doing some fun stuff for AfterBuzz TV recently. I was talking about a recent episode of The Affair and the movie Whiplash, and I was also on...
Did you see Whiplash already?
Yeah.
I want to see it.
You should see it, you should listen to like a 100-minute-long podcast where I talk about it.
Yeah, 100% done.
Yeah, obviously. We'll go to AfterBuzzTV.com for that. Also, you might remember Zane, who was on the Bad Santa episode of this particular podcast, but he also does his own podcast called Mystic Party, and I got to be a guest on that.
Is it out?
It's out.
Yay!
Cool. Yeah, so just search for Mystic Party on iTunes, and you can hear that episode.
Awesome. I got to get on there, too.
You should. Talk to Zane about it.
Yeah,
he wants you on.
I want to be on.
Cool. In that case, guys...
we have a show tonight, but Dan's not going
to
be there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, anybody listening to this isn't going to be able to, like, show
I know,
up
but I
time.
Just want people to know that that's something that we do.
Yes.
Our team, Part Wolf, is cool.
And yes. We're and doing we, more and shows. We perform improv shows, and we're going to be performing a show at the clubhouse tonight. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Try to find us next time.
Because we're funny off the bat. Not just when you give us words, but sometimes off the top of our domes, we're funny.
That's right.
Cool. Yeah. Well then, until next time, guys. Peace and love.
Peace and love.
Bye.
Bye.